97 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
David Byrne is someone whose creativity seems unstoppable. And so does his appeal, with each generation spawning new fans of his solo work and of Talking Heads. Coming up, David Byrne shares his feelings on younger folks getting into his music.
I love it, of course. I'm trying to figure out, why is that?
He also talks about the moment before making his new album, Who Is This Guy, when he wasn't so sure he could create, and how he got through it. And speaking of younger generations,
my love gave me a moisturizing thing.
He tells the story behind his song Moisturizing Thing, which sees him transforming into a three-year-old.
My partner, now my wife, often reminds me, don't forget to put on your moisturizer. And I thought, what if it really works? And I wake up and my skin is like, whoa, much smoother.
David Byrne, today, I'm Raina Duras, and this is World Cafe.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. This story contains details that may be disturbing for some listeners. A 44-year-old embarrassed man pleaded guilty to multiple counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct Wednesday in St. Louis County. The charges, first announced in August, stem from Ryan Ross Denzer Johnson's repeated assaults against an adolescent relative in 2023 and 2024. Denzer Johnson formerly taught at Mesabi East and at Babbitt, and was involved with school robotics programs as well as a leader in his church. The sentence will be determined at a January 5th hearing. In a news release, the St. Louis County Attorney's Office described a plea agreement. The state may pursue a prison sentence of more than 17 years. Denzer Johnson's defense attorneys can argue for the minimum sentence, which state sentencing guidelines place at almost 13 years behind bars. County Attorney Kimberly Mackey says the guilty plea, quote, ensures that Denzer Johnson will be held accountable for the devastating harm he inflicted on a child and commends the bravery of the victim for coming forward. Rural property owners impacted by Bemidji's severe blowdown storm earlier this summer may be able to share the cost of replanting their woods. The Minnesota Forestry Association hosted the first of two webinars earlier this week to discuss state and federal cost-sharing programs available to woodland property owners. Lori Barrow, a DNR forestry specialist out of the Bemidji office, says the DNR's emergency disaster funds can cover up to 50% of costs to prepare damaged wooded areas for reforestation.
Timber removal and mulching work in order to prepare sites for future regeneration, as well as to reduce potential fuel hazards, so wildfire risk in these areas. So here you can see some of the activities that are included, site prep for replanting efforts, replanting woods after a salvage harvest. That includes the cost of those seedlings.
The DNR can't reimburse for woodland work already completed, but can share costs on a forester-approved reforestation plan on storm-damaged woodlands between 3 and 10 acres. The USDA also has a reforestation program through the Farm Service Agency. And while approval has so far been delayed due to the federal shutdown, DNR forester John Carlson says larger wooded parcels impacted by the summer storms could see up to 75% of the cost shared to reforest.
From what I heard the last time it was in the Bemidji area in 2012, that it worked fairly well for people. So we're looking to hopefully make it the case this time as well.
The Minnesota Forestry Association will host its next webinar on state and federal forestry programs on December 8th. And hosts an informational webpage with resources for storm-impacted property owners. The Minnesota Department of Transportation will host an open house on its Highway 34 corridor study in Park Rapids next week. The meeting will be 4:00 p.m. Tuesday at Park Rapids City Hall. The corridor study focuses on Highway 34 between Western Avenue South and east of Hubbard County Road 4, also known as the Emmaville Road. The study is separate from the nearby Highway 71 corridor study. A resurfacing project on Highway 34 is anticipated in the next 7 to 10 years, with other potential improvements like increased pedestrian facilities possible. Project staff members will be at the open house to share information, answer questions, and gather public input. A state task force is looking for input from people who gather mushrooms, berries, or other plants on state lands. The Minnesota Sustainable Foraging Task Force was created by the legislature earlier this year. The group is tasked with developing foraging guidelines for state lands that balance public access with conservation needs. The task force is hosting three online public input sessions, one on Wednesday, one on November 20th, and one on December 3rd. They want to know what you forage, how you do it, concerns about effects on other recreational experiences, and areas of confusion around the current rules. Visit our website for more information. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. Sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from your favorite community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. There are some people so endlessly inventive, so innovative and creative, that it's almost impossible to imagine them getting something like writer's block. David Byrne, at least to me, is one of those people. In 1975, Byrne, along with bassist Tina Weymouth and drummer Chris France, founded Talking Heads, a band that were trailblazers in the new wave scene and would go on to release several extremely influential albums. Byrne is also a prolific solo artist who seems to follow his curiosity in every direction, from sound collage and film scores to theater and dance, including his recent Broadway show for his last album, American Utopia. But before writing his new album, Who is the Sky, it finally happened. David Byrne got writer's block. Coming up this hour, I sit down with David Byrne to talk about what happened, how he eventually started writing again, about the joyful new album, and about the new vibrant stage show for his current tour. Our conversation is in just a moment. First, from Who is the Sky, this is David Byrne. Everybody laughs.
One, two, three, and... Everybody cries, everybody lives and everybody dies. Everybody eats and everybody loves. Everybody knows what everybody does. Everybody's going through the changes. Every complication. What you say with gesture and expression. In my imagination. Every mobile phone. In every restaurant, everyone we know, and everything you want. Everybody wonders what you're gonna do. Everything is closer, everything is true. Everybody's starting everything again. Everybody's outside now, they're coming in. Everybody. The garbage, looking for inspiration. Some will find it staring at the ceiling of the subway station. Everyone you love in every kind of way, everything you know, and every single face, every change of heart. And every saving grace, every song we sing, and every kind of play. Everybody's asking, everybody please. Everybody's going everywhere at once. Everybody's backside, everybody's front.
From his latest album, Who is the Sky? You just heard David Byrne with Everybody Laughs. I'm Raina Duras. David Byrne is my guest today. Welcome back to the World Cafe.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good to be back.
It's wonderful to have you. I'm so happy to meet you.
Thank you.
And also, that song makes me happy. I feel like it's just a good feeling song. And especially when everything kind of feels, I don't know, you look at the news, feels like we're pretty divided at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great reminder that we're kind of all the same.
These things happen to everyone.
Yeah.
And we all do a lot of these things described in the song. So it's kind of like good and bad, up and down. We're all doing all that.
Yeah. I understand the song started as a list you were making.
Yes. I've done songs before that start as lists. It's not my original idea. Cole Porter did lots of list songs. Sometimes it's a way to get things going. Then you find that, okay, is there going to be a twist somehow after you make the list? And you don't want people to be able to predict too much what the next one's going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know if this song has a twist.
So when did you start making that list?
Probably a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Probably something like that. I started writing lyrics or sometimes just a song title. Sometimes I do that.
Yeah.
And I'll file that away and think, okay, this sounds like the beginning of an idea. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. When you went to record that song, eventually, I know you called Annie Clark to come by and work on it, which must have been kind of nice to be able to call somebody, have them come by, because I know this album sort of has its roots during the pandemic lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that having that time in isolation where you couldn't tour, you couldn't go and record stuff in a studio with a bunch of people, did it give you time to reflect?
Oh, yeah. I think... For a lot of people, it was a time of thinking, what's really important to me?
Yeah.
What do I really value now? And so you had people kind of leaving their jobs and going, you know, I don't really like this job. Or they go, this is a dead-end job. And I'd rather not stay here and try and do something that I really care about.
Yeah.
You had a lot of people doing that. Well, I happen to like my jobs, but...
So you came to that conclusion, at least.
Yes, but there's parts of it, like performing, that I wasn't able to do. Recording, I could record stuff at home, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't finish anything up. It's just a bedroom. But, yeah.
You didn't really write a lot during the pandemic, right?
No, I made sometimes notes of... As I said, I made notes maybe of a song title or something like that of like, oh, here's an idea. But then I didn't know where to go with it. I felt like during the pandemic, I thought, this is bigger than me writing songs.
Right.
And I thought, can I write about this? I ended up writing, one song about it. But for the most part, I thought, no, I don't know how to write a song about it. I tried writing one during the pandemic. It was called 6 Feet Away.
Mm-hmm.
It was about meeting someone, but you can't get any closer than 6 feet. And all you can see is their eyes.
It was such a weird time when you think back on mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Yeah.
Not being able to write songs, not being able to like fully flesh that out, it's kind of unusual for you.
It's unusual, but I did a lot of drawings. After I'd done quite a lot of them, I looked at them, I said, oh, this is what's going through my mind. There's pictures of kind of distorted bodies because during the pandemic, our bodies were kind of holding us captive.
Yeah.
The fact that we're vulnerable to this infection meant that we couldn't go out, and it's our bodies saying, nope, you can't lead a normal life.
Yeah. And then, so at what point were you able to start really writing songs again?
It was kind of when life sort of returned to normal. Then I realized I had all these kind of just the germ of a lot of ideas. And I thought, oh, I can see if I can flesh those out.
There are some like really funny, surreal moments on the album. I think Moisturizing Thing. It took me, the first time I listened through, I'm like, wait, what is going on here? And I had to like go back and listen a couple times because I was like, oh, I see. I'm like, oh yeah, I know this, like getting an anti-aging lotion. I'm like, this is very familiar to me, buying something like that. Yeah. Where did that, like, when did that, where did the germ of that come from for you?
Well, my partner, now my wife, often reminds me, don't forget to put on your moisturizer. Yeah. And at some point, I'm falling asleep and thinking, okay, but what if it really works? Because, like, I thought, what is this doing? Really? What is this really doing? And I thought, what if it really works? And I wake up and my skin is like, whoa, much smoother. And so I imagined that as a scenario.
I'm going to play a little clip of that. Here's Moisturizing Thing from David Byrne.
Gave me a moisturizing thing. Said, hey, David, put this on your skin. It says it's anti-aging, antioxidant too. Go ahead and try it. Let's see what it can do. Woke up the next morning, and what do I see? I look like a baby, but I am still me. My honey wakes up, she looks over and screams, that lotion is magic, I look like I'm free. So smooth and so soft.
Oh, World Cafe, that's a bit of Moisturizing Thing from David Byrne. We talked a little bit earlier about the pandemic lockdowns, and I want to play a song called My Apartment Is My Friend from the album. Kind of talks about your relationship with the space that you were in during that time. Could you set the scene for us a little bit, just kind of describe that apartment that you spent the pandemic in?
I have a pretty nice apartment for New York. I tore down some walls, so it's kind of like a loft space. I have a bedroom that I turned into a music room. It's okay. There's not really any outdoors. You can't, like, there are people who could go out in their backyard and hang out, and sometimes even hang out with friends in their backyard. My daughter was able to do that. I couldn't do that. So I realized, oh, this is the place that kind of held me and kept me safe, that where I spent all this time. And so I wrote about it as if it were a person.
Yeah.
As if my apartment were a person.
Yeah. I mean, I think people had a love-hate relationship with their spaces during that time.
Yes.
I could probably draw you my apartment, like every inch of that place.
You get to know it really well.
Yeah.
In New York, a lot of people have fairly small or modest-sized apartments. They spend a lot of their time socializing. They meet in restaurants or bars or clubs or music venues or whatever. And they, unlike other places, they don't usually invite a lot of people over to their apartment, because their apartments are sometimes really small. But now it was kind of like, oh, now I have to be in this place all the time.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't like that.
Yeah. I'm going to play My Apartment Is My Friend. This is David Byrne on World Cafe.
My triumphs and my shame.
The things that no one knows, the moments that we shared. So forgive me if I hesitate, if a tear comes now and then. You stood by me when darkness fell. My apartment is my friend. My apartment is my friend.
On World Cafe, you just heard My Apartment is My Friend from David Byrne's latest album, Who is the Sky? I'm Rena Duras. David Byrne's here with me today. You brought an orchestra for this album, the Ghost Train Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to enlist them for this project?
I heard a record they did. Maybe it's in 2023 or early 24, where they did recordings of Moondog's material. Moondog was this street poet and musician in the late 60s, early 70s in New York, and then he moved to Germany. And he wrote all this music. I was familiar with it. There was a recording done, I think, on CBS or some major label back then, and I had that record where the cover is a gatefold of him in his full Viking gear with horns and amazing big beard and everything. So it looked like, oh, this guy is a character. But the music is really, really nice. And they did a beautiful record of a lot of his compositions and songs, sung by like Rufus Wainwright and Jonas Policewoman and some other people. And I liked the sound of it. It mixed orchestral instruments, a kind of a chamber orchestra, with band stuff, bass and guitar and drums and all that kind of thing. So I thought, oh, what if these songs I'm writing sounded a little bit like that? So I connived how to meet them without them knowing that that's what I was thinking.
What did you do?
I saw they had a live show booked in Brooklyn, and I thought, Rufus, who sings a couple of these songs, he's not going to come. He lives in L.A. He's not going to come in for this. So I know Joan, Jonah's policewoman. So I said, Joan, do they need somebody to sing the Rufus stuff? I'll volunteer.
I'm noble.
But that worked. I met them by doing that, and we got along, so yeah.
Well, why don't we hear one of the songs that Rufus sang for that album? This is Be a Hobo from Ghost Train Orchestra.
Oh, that's a good one.
Was Be a Hobo from Ghost Train Orchestra. I'm talking to David Byrne today on World Cafe. Aside from the orchestra, there's a lot of collaboration on this album. And really, even just in our conversation and reading interviews with you, hearing you talk, just interviews generally, it does seem like you kind of know everybody. How do you choose who to collaborate with?
Sometimes to be like the singers, like St. Vincent coming,
sure,
in, inviting her to come in. Well, we've worked together in the past. We've stayed in touch. We're friends. And I knew that when I was doing some kind of fix-ups and overdubs and things in L.A., that she was only a few blocks away. And Kid Harpoon and I said, be nice to have another voice on this song. Mm. I said, well, Annie's only like around the corner. Yeah, why don't I give her a call? That was kind of easy.
Sometimes it's just convenience.
Yes, I mean, she's great, but it was...
Yeah, of course. I mean, you do collaborate often. How would you say collaboration has helped you grow and change as an artist, or I mean, even maybe just as a person?
As an artist, for instance, Hayley Williams came in to sing on the record as well. I'd met her because we'd covered each other's songs.
Right, before. She covered Burning Down the House.
Yeah, and I covered one of their songs.
Hard Times, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was in New York when we were performing there recently, and I said, okay, will you come and sing the song that you sang, you know, and maybe another one? She did. It was great. But in order to make it work, I said, oh, can you add a harmony here? Can you add a harmony here that will kind of lift up this section or this chorus? She's kind of incredible. She just found it and did it immediately and fit right in. And then I thought, she did that so well. Now we have to keep it. She's gone, but we're going to find somebody else to sing what she did. So that, yeah, collaboration, it added something to the music that I hadn't thought of.
Right. I want to play that song that you sing with Hayley Williams in just a second. But when I was thinking about kind of Paramore covering Talking Heads, you covering a Paramore song, and then you working together, and I know you just worked on another song together, mm-hmm. Some more music together. And I was thinking about before any of that, if you'd asked me to make someone a playlist, I may not have put Talking Heads and Paramore on the same playlist. I thought, like, wow, these are two very different bands in my mind. What is the sort of common musical language that you and Hayley share?
She told me that that song of theirs, Hard Times, was inspired by Talking Heads. So I thought, oh, now I can hear it. Now I didn't hear it before, but now I can hear it. I saw them live, and the thing that really struck me is her relationship with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's really, not just the singing, but when she's talking, she's really talking to them. They're listening. There's this real rapport going on that is very open and transparent. I was just like, wow, that is kind of amazing.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to the relationship with the audience thing in a few minutes. But right now, let's hear What Is the Reason for It. It's David Byrne and Hayley Williams on World Cafe.
Love is cold. Love is hot. Love can make you feel a lot like someone else. Love is new. Love is old.
On World Cafe, I'm Raina Duras. My guest is David Byrne. You just heard his song, What Is the Reason for It?, where he's joined by Hayley Williams. Hayley is just like one of the many young artists that you've worked with and inspired. And in the summer, you performed with Olivia Rodrigo at the Governor's Ball, which is a wonderful video, if you haven't seen it, of you guys dancing, wearing matching red outfits. What does it mean to you to have new generations of young folks get into your music? And not, I'm not even just talking about like the Talking Heads stuff, the new stuff, all of it.
Well, it's kind of wonderful. Yes, I love it, of course. I'm trying to figure out, why is that? Is that just, or is a younger generation just more curious about everything?
Yeah.
I think there's there's a little truth to that, that the younger generation is more curious about music from the past, music from this kind of music, that kind of music. They're kind of just more open in their listening habits. That might be due to streaming, because streaming, you don't have information. You don't know if a song is old or new or what or anything. You hear it and you go, oh, I kind of like that. I have issues with streaming and payments and things like that. But I think that's the good side, that it opens people up, if they want to all this other kinds of music.
Yeah. Is there any, I mean, when you're working with people who, I mean, you've been in this business, I mean, the music industry, and then also just the making of music business for a long time. Is there any advice you give them?
I wish there was something easier that I could say, where it was just like, oh, do this, be yourself, don't, you know. But it's hard. It's hard out there. And the landscape is different than when I came up.
Yeah.
When I came up, for a while anyway, you could make money on live shows, which musicians can still do. But then once you started putting out records, you could actually make money from records. So you could eke out a living.
Yeah.
I think that's harder. That's harder to do now.
I'm speaking with David Byrne. In a moment, our conversation continues. He'll talk about his latest tour and what he learned from his last tour, including one lesson that surprised him. That's next on World Cafe. Welcome back to World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris, and my guest today is David Byrne. His new album is called Who is the Sky? You've been out on your Who is the Sky tour for a little while now. You set the bar high with American Utopia. For folks who haven't seen this one yet, how does this tour's stage show compare to American Utopia?
I'll start with the similarities. The similarities are that we're still untethered. All the musicians are, no one's kind of fixed in one spot. The drummers, the instrumentalists, singers, dancers, everybody is moving around. So that's the continuity. I couldn't see going back to having people be rooted.
Once you've been free.
Yes. And that, doing that had this effect that I didn't anticipate. Once everybody could move around, it kind of democratized the stage space. It meant usually the drummers or whatever are in the back and they're kind of dark and you see them every
and
once in a while.
They're kind of hidden too.
They're kind of hidden. Yeah. In this case, there are times when the drummers come to the front and I go to the back. And I realized, oh, everybody gets to shine and be appreciated.
Yeah.
And the audience gets to know all of them in a way that you don't in a more traditional setup.
That's so true, having like seen American Utopia. Mm-hmm. And like you, the musicians almost become like characters themselves, because you mm-hmm. like you kind of get to know them, like you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, you get so to true. Know them. So that, I thought, I can't go back from that. But I think in a response to kind of the times we're living in, I decided to add a lot of color. We're wearing these brightly colored outfits. The stage is We have a kind of LED wall that is really colorful landscape. So it looks like we're, well, on a New York rooftop or in a forest or in the middle of a rushing river. But yes, and it, there's just a lot visually, there's a lot going on where the one American Utopia was very austere.
Yeah,
visually.
Yeah, you're all in gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more question I have about the choreography that I was wondering about. Okay, so obviously when you fully choreograph a show, there's lots to learn. There's lots of rehearsing that happens. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, when you know exactly what everybody's going to be doing on the stage, does that give you a different kind of freedom? Because you can like play in your own way with, well, you know everything is going to be how it's supposed to be.
When we're doing, it's fairly structured and choreographed. Yeah. But I find that once we kind of get that under our belts and kind of internalize it and we're not thinking about, oh, I have to move this way now and then I do this. Once we stop thinking about it, it becomes a kind of conduit for our feelings. Somehow, the movement becomes, it's not always literally interpreting the song, but it becomes another way of whatever, performing and connecting. And yeah, it's like music. It's this abstraction that goes out. I think when I first started doing that and working with kind of movement, there was a little bit of maybe conceptual pushback that I got, saying that, well, you know, you're not leaving any room for kind of improvised things or things to happen naturally. It's, you're kind of, the implication was, this is not authentic anymore.
Right.
Because you've kind of decided this is what's going to happen. On one level, that's true. On another level, it becomes authentic in another way, in an emotional way, when it works. If it doesn't work, then yeah, then it's just going through the motions.
Have you had those nights where you're like, this is not working?
No, but it's in the creative process. In
right,
the process
right.
of working the stuff out, there's moments where it's going, I don't think that is kind of gelling with this song.
Yeah. I know you're also playing a bunch of Talking Heads songs on this tour, and I'm sure this changes, but which is your favorite Talking Heads song to revisit these days?
Wow. Well, one of them is Nothing But Flowers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big hit, but I think a fair number of people know it.
It's one of my favorites.
When it was written, it wasn't as much of a thing. But now, of course, you hear the words of it and kind of, and it's, you really think, oh, climate change.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right.
And which wasn't as much of a thing when it was written. But then you realize, oh, now it has a different meaning.
Right.
And it raises all these questions, but it's a lot of fun. And it's kind of funny that,
Yeah, it's kind of, I've always, you know, I've played it lots of times on the radio, and sometimes I'll say, like, this is maybe the most uplifting song about just, like, post-apocalyptic song you'll ever hear.
It's true, yes.
Here is the most uplifting post-apocalyptic song you'll ever hear. This is Talking Heads, Nothing But Flowers.
Smiling up.
That was a bit of Nothing But Flowers from the Talking Heads. I'm talking to David Byrne today on World Cafe. How do you adapt those Talking Heads songs to who you are and how you perform now?
Some of them, like that one, like Nothing But Flowers, to my ears, we do it pretty faithfully. There's a wonderful musician, Ray Suen, who's playing guitar with us, and he covers Johnny Marr's guitar parts on that song and just kind of nails it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of amazing. Other ones get changed quite a bit. The same guy, Ray, I said, I want to do Heaven, that Talking Heads song, Heaven. And then he came back and said, you know, I play violin and our bass player, Kelly, plays cello. And then he sent me this demo of an arrangement with very simple arrangement with cello and a little bit of keyboard and violin. And I said, yeah, that's it. That's how we should begin this, the whole show. And it gives that song, again, a completely new meaning.
Yeah, yeah. My guest is David Byrne on World Cafe. Earlier you mentioned Hayley Williams and her relationship with the audience. And I've heard you talk about this a bit. Like when you will go to any concert, you'll be watching, like you'll be looking for stage design, how they do the production. Mm-hmm. But that watching the performer's relationship with the audience is something that, you know, interests you. How would you describe your relationship with your audience?
It's not quite as transparent and personal as Haley's, but I talk to them. Mm-hmm. I talk to the audience. And I try to talk about things that will kind of put the songs in a kind of context and maybe make a little thread that ties some of the songs together.
Yeah.
I think that kind of happens. And I've discovered that occasionally I can get a laugh, sometimes unintended, but I realize every night they're laughing at that line.
It surprises you?
Sometimes, because sometimes I didn't think it was like a joke or an intentionally super funny line, but then it always gets this laugh or some kind of reaction. And so I realized, oh, that's part of the relationship with the audience too.
Right.
The comedian, actor, whatever, Fred Armisen, had seen our previous show a few times. And he said, David, you should do stand-up. You should try doing some stand-up.
What was your reaction when he first said it?
I said, oh, let me think about this. And then I was in Los Angeles for some medical thing. And he does it, hosts a night at a place called Largo, where he has other comedians come in, but he doesn't say who it is. They only know it's him and people he's invited. He said, David, you come in and do this one. You only have to do like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, can I do it as a slideshow? show some pictures I've taken? That will, rather than just standing there. He said, yeah, we'll set that up. And I said, he's a great drummer. And I said, can we also, in our back pocket, have a song?
Just in case this like goes pear-shaped. Yeah,
everything goes wrong. We'll just go, okay, forget that. We'll play a song. So I said, let's do Moisturizing Thing if everything else goes wrong. And so, but it, to my ears, it went really well.
What was on the slide?
Got a lot of just odd things I've taken photos of. And sometimes I would just put up the photo and say what it was, and that would get a laugh. And I thought, oh, this is too easy. I might try it again sometime, but I liked the fact that it was unannounced.
Yeah. So you know that people aren't coming because they're like already fans of yours.
No.
Yeah.
You know that. And yet they're coming with a very open mind. Mm-hmm. They they're coming to laugh. So, yeah.
How would you say your relationship with the audience has changed over the years? Other than now knowing you can get a laugh.
I used to... Talking Heads, I often didn't say anything except, thank you. And then I'd give the name of the song. I figured, there's the information you need. That's it.
So it expanded from
that. It did expand a lot from that.
You're listening to my conversation with David Byrne. After a quick break, he'll talk about what makes experiencing live music such a special thing. That's coming up on World Cafe. This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras, spending this hour with David Byrne. His new album is called Who is the Sky? And just before the break, we were talking about how David's relationship with the audience has changed over time and how he realized he could get laughs on stage.
Sort of tying into that exchange with the audience, this album is funny. It is joyful. It is playful and sort of surreal sometimes. But there really is a feeling of togetherness, I think, at least in several of the songs. Then on stage, I know you've said things during this tour like, as people, we love being together. Could you talk about that, about the importance of togetherness and why it's something that's been on your mind?
Yeah, I know. I avoid talking about partisan politics, but it's kind of the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it's there. What I talk about is that as human beings, we like being with other people. It's something we've evolved as social animals to want to be with other people and to talk with them and hang out with them and whatever, and that kind of thing. And I'm not on social media, but I've come to realize that being on social media is not being together with other people. It's not the same thing.
I mean, even if you were, I think people, whether they want to admit it or not, we all really figured that out during the pandemic when it was not a substitute, you
yes,
know?
Yes.
It didn't really work.
Yeah.
And I think it also, you know, to experience music together is something that's very primal and very powerful.
Yes, and being someone who performs, I've experienced that as an audience member and as someone who performs, you realize this is something that's really kind of key to us. All part of the reason we go to concerts is part of it's for the music, but part of it is just to be together.
Yeah, and to experience that thing that you all might listen to at home on headphones or whatever, together in a room. The last song that I want to play from the album, I think, kind of ties into this. Now, I'm not going to make assumptions on what it's actually about, but in my mind, when we are singing, could be maybe about that. Could you tell us about the song?
I promised I would never write songs about what I do. But I've broken my promise. I would never write about, you know, the act of performing.
Why?
And singing. It just seems like a cliche.
Okay.
So many people have done it. There's people who have written songs about being on tour, which is fine, but that's done. I don't need to do it. Other things like that I thought, no, I'm not going to write songs about that, and then I go ahead and do it. this... That song, the anthropologist in me came out, and I started looking at myself and other people in the act of singing and what it looks like, what it physically feels like, what it feels like to sing with other people or by yourself or look at someone singing and imagine, what are they feeling? Their face is going through all kinds of things. What's going on there? That kind of thing.
How often do you watch like video of yourself singing?
Never. Not anymore.
There are some interesting vocals near the end of this song. What's going on there?
That song and at least one other, maybe more, on this record, where as I was doing my demos, rather than doing, say, a guitar solo or an instrumental solo, I just sang it.
Yeah.
I just sang the instrumental part, with syllables, like do-de-do-de-do or whatever. And I thought, that's kind of okay. I think let's just leave it at that.
It fits the song.
Uh-huh.
It totally makes sense. Well, let's take a listen. This is When We Are Singing. It's David Byrne on World Cafe.
When we are singing, I know the way we look. Swimming, drifting, floating on, and everything is true.
David Byrne, When We Are Singing. That's a song from his new album, Who Is the Sky? David Byrne has been my guest today. It has been so wonderful to have you here. Thank you so
much. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Come by anytime.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with David Byrne. His new album is called Who Is the Sky? Oh, and for the record, in case you were curious, yes, he did show up to the interview on his bicycle. Thank you again to David Byrne and to World Cafe senior producer Kimberly Junod for her work on that session. Also, thanks to our entire World Cafe team. Chris Williams is our technical director. Our programming and booking coordinator is Chelsea Johnson. Our line producer is Will Loftus. Our producer is Miguel Perez. George Murphy is in charge of video. Our digital director is Alex Keim. Bruce Warren is our executive producer. Kaleo is our contributing host. Also, a big shout out to all of our affiliate stations across the country, including Hawaii Public Radio. We produce this show at WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Raina Duris. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.
And you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by, let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by, water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime, water flowing underground.
And you may ask yourself, how do I work this? And you may ask yourself,
World Cafe is supported by the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org. And by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing extraordinarily creative individuals whose ideas, solutions, and discoveries expand people's expectations of what's possible. MacFound.org.
Another hour ahead of the World Cafe. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out our playlist, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
This is People Powered KAXE, where you get deep dives into the nature of Northern Minnesota. And sometimes you get some advice.
As the season of fall is coming to a close, please consider not getting rid of all your leaves that have fallen in your yard. Leaves that litter our yards provide hiding spaces and insulation in the winter for insects and a host of small animals. Also in the spring, leaves start breaking down, releasing nitrogen and other nutrients back into the